You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. We've got a good one for you today. We're going to talk about moving from CJS, Common JS, to ESM, ECMAScript modules. So this is a big transition that's been happening in the Node ecosystem for a while. And I think it's at a point now where things are starting to break if you're not in ESM. And I just moved over my entire platform as I'll talk about it in a second, but I think it's a good time to talk about this and sort of go through it because it's unfortunately not very easy to do this type of stuff. We're sponsored today by Sentry. Sentry is the error and exception tracking platform. Actually, this is the perfect, I got the perfect ad read for this one, Scott. So after I converted my entire application to ESM, I tested it and everything, but you never know when you do the first deploy, especially when you are changing the way that you run your application. So basically, I deployed that sucker, and then I just sat there waiting for the Sentry emails to come in or like refreshing the dashboard for things to pop up. And luckily, only one minor thing had popped up. And I was very happy about that. But it was very easy for me to quickly go in. I immediately made that into a GitHub issue. And then it dumped all the information into the GitHub issue. I could go in, I fix it. And then you, in Sentry, you mark it as resolved, which basically is saying, like, get out of here and don't come back. I hope you don't come back.
I hope you don't come back is really what it's saying. Yeah.
And what Sentry will do is it will say, okay, like you fix this. It will tell you in which commit you fix it to, or you can pin it to a specific version. And then if that same issue comes back, it will tell you, hey, like you said, you fixed it. You said you resolved this, but it's now coming back and here's the information about it. So fantastic. I love it. I have zero issues on my Node backend right now. And it gives you a bunch of robots dancing around. So big fan of that.
Yeah.
Check it out. Sentry.io. Use the coupon code TASTYTREAT. Gives you 2 months for free. Thank you, Sentry, for sponsoring. All right. Let's get on into it. Maybe we should just talk real quick about our own experiences. I know you have been on ESM for a lot longer because of the, you were on, what's it? Why Meteor? You were on Meteor. So you've been on ESM for a while, right?
Well, so I guess it's not correct to say I was on ESM with Meteor, but Meteor had the import style syntax, even though it was an ESM, as its default means of importing from the start. So what's a very wild thing to me is that I completely missed CJS syntax to the point where when I see CJS, Common JS,
like a require.
I almost always have to, I don't have to look it up, but I'm always like, wait, what is it? How do I do that again? Because I just flat out never use that style as Meteor by default import syntax style for everything. And then it compiled it to CJS behind the scenes. And then so when I moved the site over to off of Meteor, I moved it first to just a straight up Vite server with React. And that was ESM based. So I went from imports compiled to ESM or imports compiled to CJS to straight up ESM. And now with Svelte and whatever, when I rewrote my API using ESBuild, I wrote it with ESM from the start. So yeah, I get to control my environment to the point where I can control my Node version. I can control everything. I will choose to use ESM because you either do it now at the point when you're making all the big changes or you do it later at some other point. And I'm the type of guy, if I'm ripping stuff out, I'm going to rip it all out at once and just put it back together.
Yeah. So are you compiling and running ESM on the server or are you compiling and running Common JS on the server?
ESM on the server for all my API.
That's what I did as well, is that I said, like, I don't, because it's kind of confusing, is you can write ESM, I'm using air quotes here, and compile to Common JS, and you can run it in Common JS, you can ship as Common JS. And then there's the second one, which is like going full go ECMAScript modules, ESM, and actually running it on the server in ESM. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to just be rid of all the common JS. So it's kind of complicated. There's a whole bunch of gotchas in the differences between the two. There's lots of different file extensions and whatnot. And then on top of that, we're not going to talk too much about TypeScript, but adding TypeScript into the mix makes things somewhat complicated, but also TypeScript makes things somewhat easier to actually make this transition.
I would say it makes it easier overall. If you ignore the fact that you have to be writing types in TypeScript, just the fact of, you know, you get some niceties for free, essentially, from TypeScript handling the I had ESBuild doing the compiling, but your TS config handling a lot of settings that you might have to help and assist in that area. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, what did I do? No, I didn't do that. I had a little bit of TypeScript in the repo already. And then the move over was I just turned on AllowJS. We'll talk about this in the show where we convert entirely to TypeScript as well, but basically, I did use TypeScript as the bundler for the entire thing, which was kind of nice. Even though 90% of the app wasn't TypeScript, you could just say AllowJS, turn your head to all the errors, and it's still you can still compile it, just no problem.
Yeah, do you ever see that Simpsons meme that's like, do not enter, and then in like small letters it says, or do, I'm just a sign. Or something. It's like, like I can't enforce it. I'm just a sign. I'm just gonna say, hey.
Or do.
That's the TypeScript with Java, allow JavaScript. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about why ESM. Like, what's the benefit? And quite honestly, it's a lot of work with very little benefit to it. There are a couple of benefits to it. So let's talk about what they are. But it's not going to be, there's nothing amazing. To the point where a lot of people think like maybe ESM was a mistake, because there was nothing wrong with CommonJS. The reason we're annoyed with CommonJS right now is because we have all of this interop that we have to do between the module formats. But back when it was just CommonJS, things were good. But then also people were not using things in the browser. So let's talk about the benefits of moving to ESM. First of all, it's a spec. CommonJS is a spec, but it's not like a blessed one by the people who create JavaScript, TC39. So by having a spec, they can implement it in Node.js, in Dino, in the Cloudflare Workers, in the browser, in like literally anywhere that wants to support JavaScript, they have to implement that spec and make it work according to the spec so that ideally you'll be able to share code between your front end and your back end with no issues.
I didn't realize that CommonJS was created by Mozilla.
Was it really?
Looking up some history on this. Yeah.
I didn't either.
CommonJS was started by Mozilla engineer Kevin Dangor in January of 2009 to address the lack of common accepted modality practices in programming. Yeah, no, I didn't necessarily realize that. Maybe if it wasn't a Mozilla, I don't see here if it was like a Mozilla thing or if it was just Kevin doing it for himself.
When was Node.js created? Node.js was initially released May 27, 2009. And this was created January 2009. Wow. So props to Ryan for taking this 3-month-old project. Did Node have modules? I don't ever remember a Node. I was very early in Node. I don't ever remember not having a module system.
Yeah, I don't either. I remember going to like a meetup that was like very early on, and like it took an hour just to get an Express server up and running for everybody and then deploying to Heroku. And just because it was so foreign to everybody at the time, I'm like, what are we doing? And then by the end of it, I remember being like, wait, why are we doing this? Like, oh, I'm just serving an HTML file. Why is this so interesting?
Oh, that's good. What else do we have here? It's apparently more performant. And some of the reasons behind that is there's a bunch of differences between CommonJS and ESM. But one of the ones is that ESM is what's called statically analyzed, meaning that you can rip through the entire require or import tree in a single pass and know exactly what dependencies are needed by your dependencies are needed by your dependencies. With Node.js, like this is one thing I had, you can import something inside of a function. You could make an import. Or you could, I had like a string that was like, my config file was config-development and config-production. And I would just take the node-env and interpolate it into the string. You can't do that with ESM because that's not static. The benefit to that apparently is like better tree shaking, meaning that you'll be able to figure out which parts of the code you do and do not need. I know like Vite and Webpack and all these things have gotten pretty good at figuring that out for all module systems, but I guess being statically analyzed makes that even easier.
Yeah. And I mean, you've stated this a couple of times, but the fact that it's a browser spec, it works in the browser, is a big deal. It, you know, we do this in one of our JavaScript courses where we say, hey, we're going to be just writing a script tag here. And in the script tag, we're importing things. And there's just something really magical about that.
Yeah.
To be able to just straight up use import syntax in JavaScript without any compilations in HTML. Yeah. I remember being shocked the first time I did that. Wait, like, you're allowed to do this? Holy cow.
Yeah, it's awesome. Even like I do a lot of demos and often I'll do a script tag. And if you put type a module on it, you can import stuff from URLs, but you can also use top level await inside of a script tag.
Top level await,
cool.
Right? Yeah.
That's the next
what a
benefit.
World.
ESM allows you to have top level await. And what that means is you can await things inside of a module without having to have an asynchronous function. So previously, what people would do is they would have a function that is a sync. I would have a function called go.
One is called start.
Yeah, and at the very bottom of the page, you run it, or you have an iffy that's a sync, and it runs immediately. That's annoying because if you want to programmatically export something from that module that is based on the asynchronous data, like you need to load a file in first and then export some data from that file, it's not really possible. So having top level await inside of modules is super, super handy. Even like some of my modules, I import like a list of stuff from GitHub when I hit it and the first time it's run. And it's nice not to have to like have a iffy or something like that. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, and sometimes you just import a file and you want that file to run and do something. You don't need to even wait for that promise to resolve or do anything with that. Like, you know, I just want, you know, this thing to start up and start doing its thing or this to initialize, you know, Sentry. I just want Sentry to initialize. So I import the file. When that file opens up, it will start to initialize, you know?
Yeah. You fire it up and you don't care about like obviously you can catch any errors and log them if that happens, but you're not waiting for the thing to come back before you can do the next thing. That's actually a good question I had. Maybe this is an entire different show, but in my app platform, I have when somebody buys something, there's a number of like things that I do. I send them an email with the product. I send them a notification to my phone that someone bought something. I add them to my database. There's some newsletter markings that happen if they're in there to say they had bought something. And all of those things, I don't wait for any of those things to come back because any one of those things could fail or take a longer time, that's kind of annoying. And I thought like, okay, like I'm logging any errors, but like maybe that's a better use case for a queue. Right now I just kind of fire it off into
the
ether.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe I need a queue.
That is probably a better case for a queue. Yeah. Toss them into a queue. And then that queue can, if it fails, then it can retry. It can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But then you just, that's the world where you get like, here's the good, better, best kind of solution, right?
Yeah. I was sitting there thinking like, I'm just assuming all of this stuff will work. The only one I'm really waiting for is like the credit card charge. Mm-hmm. And then like, it's never been an issue before ever in the like 8 years I've been running it. But I'm thinking, maybe it should be in a queue. Like you said, the one day that the database is not able to connect, you know, then there's a charge without a database. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit of an issue.
I have emails sent to me like custom alerts outside of Sentry that are like, hey, this thing that's not supposed to be happening is happening, just in case, you know,
yeah.
Just so I can, yeah, just some extra alarms there.
That's a good case. I actually have a card for a logging show, which is, it's different than error tracking and whatnot, but just straight up logs. Yeah,
there's a lot of systems for that.
And I was thinking about, like, maybe we should do a show saying, like, what do you log? How do you log? Where do you put log them? It? Yeah. How long do you keep them?
Development versus production logging. I have I wrote this like really nice little handy middleware in SvelteKit that analyzes all of my requests as they go, just timing them. And based on how long the request takes, it gives me different emoji. So if the request is really fast, it's a rocket ship. If it's kind of fast, it's a bunny. If it's slow, it's a turtle. And it's just like in my console, while I'm just browsing the site, I could just see. And it has what type of request, what path it was to. And it's just like at a glance, I could see, oh, I'm in turtle time right now. These requests to this page are all slow for some reason. Let me take a look.
That's great. Okay, we'll put that on the book. So I think that's a good show is logging. What else? Why else ESM? You can eventually import from URLs. So here's one thing that doesn't work in Node just yet is you have to import from your Node modules folder or from a local file. Eventually, you'll be able to import from a URL. That is what Dino and Bun support. And then also, Dino and Bun also support just npm colon package name, which is really cool. You don't have to npm install something. That's not part of Node as well. But Node does have a flag, experimental network imports, which will allow you to import from a URL. But I wouldn't touch that until it's ready. I've gotten bitten way too many times on that kind of stuff.
Even I haven't been touching that. And I love to get into stuff like that before it's ready. And ESM for me too. Like it was, I started ESM way too early, and like most of the things I hit were packages not publishing ESM versions yet, or versions that were angry with ESM, like specifically would break if you tried to do it. Even like Lodash had some issues for a while. So most of my issues were resolved once the community caught up a little bit. Another neat thing is that in stage three is import assertions, which would allow you to import different types of files with a specification at the end of the import. So you do import thing from thing, and then the keyword assert, and then an object. And that allows you to assert what type of file this is. Is this a JSON file? And that would allow you to straight up import like a JSON module. With the eventuality of being able to do like things like assert WebAssembly or any different types of files that you could import into JavaScript and even have them be like a transformed version or something. So that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Even just like a couple times I've just wanted to import text from a file. And then you have to like use like the Node read file API.
Well, let me tell you, if you're on Vite, which gotta love Vite, Vite has the best little helper for this, and it's the raw imports.
Yes.
It's seriously one of my favorite things about Vite, because sometimes you do just want to import a file as text and not as JavaScript or anything. And I did this when I wrote my like storybook thing. I was importing a file as text to parse some things out of it. And I found this to be really super easy. And the way you do that in Vite is just by import whatever you want, raw. Yeah, I did this for our MJML templates even.
Oh, that's the perfect use case for it. And then you don't have to do the read file type of thing. Like, what does that compile to? Probably Node APIs?
Oh, that's a great question. Haven't looked. works.
Or it just puts it in a string and makes a JavaScript file that exports that string.
I got to imagine that's it. I could look at my chunks.
It's definitely not Node APIs, because that would not work if it was client side.
Yeah, you talk and I'll check out my chunks while that's going on.
Okay. I also used that import assertion the other day in another project. I needed to log the package JSON name and version. I was working on like an NPX script and I needed to figure out what the current version was. The way that you require your in common JS, you can require JSON files, no problem. In ESM, you may not require JSON files. So the fix for that is these import assertions. It's not fully supported everywhere yet. And I ended up having to fall back to just Node read file APIs, unfortunately. But eventually that will be there. Actually, the reason why I fell back is because I needed an ESLint plugin to support linting those types of assertions because it's a new syntax. But I was just like, I'm not doing this. I don't feel like adding this, another plugin for that. I'm just going to read file and move along with my life.
Yeah, there's an element of that to all of this stuff. It's like, what can I do to just get moving at the end of this?
Yeah. Did you find it?
No, I'm still looking. I built my stuff. I have my chunks. There's a lot of them. Scrolling through them. I don't see anything named the thing that I would be expecting it to name.
The behavior is similar to Webpack's file loader. The difference is that import can be used using absolute or public paths. That makes sense because Webpack's file loader, you like tell it how to handle different types of MIME types. It must be a string.
Yeah, I'll find it eventually here.
Let's talk about actually making your project ESM. So if you have an existing project, there are kind of a couple different ways to go about it. By default, Node thinks your project is CommonJS, and therefore .js files are assumed to be CommonJS. You can flip that by putting type of module in your package JSON. And I do that so much, I kind of wish it was part of the NPM init thing where it would ask you. But the sort of shortcut to that is you can run npm pkg set type equals module, and that will update your package JSON.
That feels like more work than just going into the package.json and changing it.
I only do it because I have it in my like warp history, yeah. And it pops up. It's like, are you trying to set the module? But yeah, it's kind of annoying that you have to do that every single time. So when you flip it, now it thinks that your .js files are ESM using import, export, and your other files that have a .mjs extension are going to be CommonJS. So there's a lot of people get up in arms in the ugliness of the new file extensions. So there's two new file extensions, .mjs for modules and .cjs for CommonJS. And then the .js could be either. It could be depending on if you've set that type of module. And I've come to think like, okay, maybe this isn't such a bad idea because of how the interop needs to work. And if you have a CommonJS project and you need to create it, or you're like, all right, well, all new modules going forward are going to be ESM. You don't need to do anything other than just name it .mjs and everything will start to work. But I should say that ESM can import CommonJS packages, no problem. CommonJS cannot import ESM packages synchronously. It must be in a sync function. There's no top-level await. Then you start getting in a world of hurt. And we're at a spot now where a lot of the big module authors, all of Sindre's stuff, all of the whole MDX ecosystem, it's built on Remark. All the Remark stuff is ESM only.
I use Remark,
A lot of big authors are saying, you know what, ESM only. And that is forcing a lot of people, myself included, to say, all right, it's time to flip the sucker over. For me, rather than having to do the dance where I was like some ESM and some CommonJS at all time, I said, you know what? I'm just going to go YOLO, go for the whole thing. I flipped type of module on, and then I ran what's called a code mod on my entire code base.
Oh, geez,
And it transformed every single require and export and module that exports to the closest equivalent in ESM, and they're not totally the same. We'll talk about that, but you that gets you a lot of the way there, and that was nice. I didn't have to fuss with any fancy names. There's no like renames in my Git history. It's all just simply JS files.
Yeah, that's probably the single biggest benefit that I had to avoiding CJS syntax in my code base from the get-go is that I didn't have to change a single import statement, and they were already import statements and it just worked. So it was more or less making sure the modules are all supported as is. By the way, I did find the MJML stuff and I'm seeing it as a string inside of one of the chunks, just a big long string inside of one of the chunks. And I don't know if you've ever looked at these Chunks files before, but
a big Chunk fan.
I'll share you this screenshot here. I'm very confused at what's going on in here, and I would actually love to figure out what the heck this is actually doing here. This is within one of my Chunk files, and I haven't really pawed through these things before, but it's maybe like about 1,000 semicolons.
What?
Yeah, I'm very confused. This is one of the Vite build Chunk files. And before that, it's like a string of what almost looks like DNA sequences, where it's ACD, DCA, E, which I would imagine are just, you know, generated variables or something. But I've never taken the time to look at
these.
That's
not your source map?
This is the source map.
It's a dot okay.
map. No, you're right. Okay. So this isn't the Chunk file. This is the source map, which actually makes way more sense. Sorry, I did a find here, and I usually have maps excluded from that. So, yes.
Oh, okay. Man, imagine you're shipping 30,000 semicolons.
It's way smarter. Okay, way smarter here. The Chunk is still just a string. So the import, the raw import, is still just a const variable string of the template.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes
way more sense.
I was wondering how they did that. That makes a lot of sense. I like that.
So, but can you explain to me what's up with the semicolons in the import map regardless?
I have no idea. Import maps are, there's something about pointers and references to lines of code, but I've never actually looked into that. Like, why?
I'm going to tweet this out because I think this is fascinating.
Yeah, there's got to be some interesting like thing about like how many semicolons is how many lines or something. And like, it doesn't necessarily matter that it's 10,000 semicolons because that's what gzip does, right? Sending one semicolon or 10,000 semicolons should be the same size.
Or like a Brotli compression as well, yeah.
Yeah, plus like, oh, maybe that's what, yeah. But plus like, no one's downloading your source maps unless you pop up in DevTools. Or Sentry is trying to figure out where your, like the actual error happened in a compiled version, but it wants to show you your source code.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about converting to ESM. So I talked about the first thing I did was the code mod syntax. That covered most of it. One thing the code mod did not do is put .js on the end of all of my files. So in common JS, there is a resolver, which will, if you require something, it will first check if there, like if you require something like .util, it will first look for a folder called utils and like an index.js in there. And then it will look for like a utils.js, and then it will look for a utils.json. And like, there's a whole stack of things that Node will look for. In ESM, it says, I will look for what you tell me, which is so much more explicit than the thing. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, like just, I want to leave the .js off, you know?
Yeah.
I'm so used to that.
Just not with ESM straight up.
Yeah. You can't, I even with ES build and TypeScript, I could not find a way to leave the .js off. And I even found like the TypeScript thing, and they said, no, like you have to be explicit with this type of thing. You must put the .js on the end of it.
So that's just a Vite thing then. Sometimes I get confused about what's a Vite thing and what's not, because I haven't written an extension on any of my files except for .svelte files, which I would imagine that makes sense that it's a Vite thing if it is.
But are you compiling your backend with Vite?
I am.
Are you? Like you can, I didn't even know you could.
Yeah. So for a long time I was using just straight up ES build. And let me tell you, I was using no extensions with that as well. I don't know what I did, what magic I did in ES build to get it to do that. But I've since moved to what's called Node Vite, which is like used basically my same config for everything.
Okay. And it will just like find all the files. Cause like Vite always wants you just to give it like a single inputs. And the thing with Node.js is you have to give it all of the inputs if you want it to compile all the files, right?
I'll check out my ES build because I know I had it working because I didn't change that in my syntax in my code at some point. So
okay, yeah, because I was so for all of this, I was just using TSX to run both in dev and in production. Actually, sorry, we were using TSX in dev and TSC to compile to JavaScript to run on the server. And both of those things were like, I went deep on this. I was like, why do I need to put a .js on the end of it? And I wrote this massive regex that would essentially find all of my imports and just add a .js onto the end of it. I'm not sure why that is not part of the code mod. Maybe because a lot of people are assuming those code mods are used in front-end code where you're running it through Vite or something.
Yeah.
But I had to put .js on the end. And I'm not, at first I was like, that's awful. But now I'm just like, whatever.
It is explicit. You know, I've been saying that, like, the older I get, the more I understand to be explicit about everything, you know, type of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I still can't get behind it too much.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I kind of feel like I would still like to take it off. But especially because when writing TypeScript, you still have to put the .js on the end. And that drives me bonkers because it's not a JS file. It's a TS file, but because it compiles. Anyways, sorry, to fix this type of thing, there is a flag called ES module specifier resolution equals node. And this is a flag that you can pass to node when it starts. And it will do the same sort of lookup that it does with common JS with ESM. Again, that's experimental. I'm not going to touch it. And then I also think about like sharing code between the front end and the back end. Do I want to do that type of thing? It's sort of funny how much we love standards until it makes it hard. And then we just run for our tools that make it work for us.
I feel very seen in that sentence. That sounds just like me.
Yeah. But honestly, like, I just want to live in a world where I just Vite it, you know, or build it and it just works for me. But unfortunately, you still have to dig into a couple of these things. Let's talk about imports and exports. So previously, CommonJS had kind of two types of exports. You had module.exports, and you can kind of think of that as the default export. And then you had exports.thing2. Those are named exports. And at the end of your file or literally anywhere in your file, if you attach anything to exports dot or assigned module.exports to something, then those things transferred pretty well over to default exports and not. The one thing that doesn't transfer over very well, and this is very common in Node land, is packages that module export an object with properties on it. So you see what I'm saying here? You default export an object that has many properties on it, and it's kind of like exporting multiple named at once, but it's not the same thing.
But you could do that with barrel files, right? Isn't that
a barrel file?
Yeah, barrel file is a file that is like an index file that just simply is there to import and export things. So I would import all of my things and then just export them as an object.
Oh, yes. But what I'm saying here is that if you module export an object that has three properties on it, that's literally an object. That's an object with three properties on it. That's not three individual things that can be taken from that file. And in CommonJS, it was, meaning that you could import a property from the exported object. In ESM, if you're trying to import from a CommonJS package, see why this is so complicated?
Yeah, you end up having to specify it all. Yeah, I get that, what you're saying.
So what you have to do is you import the entire thing and then you destructure the sub property that you want, because a lot of times people don't want to import utils from utils package and then they want to import utils.formatMoney. And with that, if that's the case, then you have to import the entire thing, which is kind of annoying. Same thing with CommonJS. If you want to import everything into a single package, you have to use the import star as package. And that's annoying as well. TypeScript takes care of both of those things with a flag called Allow Synthetic Default Imports and Node.js Interop, I believe. So thankfully, those are ugly in your code. Thankfully, most those two things are taken care of, and TypeScript wraps the import and exports in some sort of magic where it makes it work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so in the weeds with stuff that feels like it doesn't matter at the end of the day. But yeah, it's wild that we're having to go through this transformation in how we do everything.
It's funny because it's not like that I care about any of this stuff, but these are all the bumps that I hit along the way, being like, why is this thing undefined? Or why can't I destructure because in Node, we are destructuring from a require. In importing ESM, your import curly brat, you're importing a named, it's different, right? And those, they do not map. They map like 87% to each other, which is really, really annoying. And the Node took a long time to figure out how do we make these things compatible, but it's still a massive headache.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about this when we get into some of the publishing stuff, because there's more about importing and exporting things in regards to that as well, that, you know, simultaneously make this more complex, but also more freeing, and like maybe one of the big features, I think, of ESM in regards to publishing stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, another gotcha is that there's no the dir name or no file name that we have available to us. So no underscore underscore dir name, no underscore underscore file name, which some people will hit that if they have that in their code base. It's an easy fix because you can do it with just straight up Node, where you import path from path, you import file to URL from URL. You have a quick little snippet here. You drop that into your code. Bingo, bango. You got yourself dir name and file name if you want it. So
yeah,
I posted that in the show notes, but yeah, easy to find Google.
I tried to convert, I tried to make a module that was, you could basically just import dir name from utils, and it will not work as a straight up variable because you have to pass it import.meta.url. And that import meta has to be in the file that you are going to be using it in. So you have to define this every single time in your file, or you can make a function that passes import meta URL. I even tried making a proxy. I tried making custom getters and setters on an object. None of it works. So you have to do it. Apparently, you should be more using like path.dirname and file to URL because those are standards. But you can, like Scott says, you can make them with the if you have code that needs dir name, you just make the variable at the top of the file and it keeps working.
Yeah, totally.
TypeScript is the goat here because it is in a space where you can mix and match the two. And this is why, even though I was not ready to go full on TypeScript for everything, I wanted to first move to 100% to ESM before I did the full TypeScript rewrite. And the reason behind that is I didn't want you have to think about all the weird things in TypeScript with CommonJS. I wanted to just be ESM. It's so much clearer. But TypeScript does make a lot of this much, much easier for you. I talked earlier about the allow synthetic default imports and the interop. You should put module node next in your TS config. And what that will do is it will ensure that you are generating ESM code out the other way. Otherwise, you're going to be generating CommonJS code, which is not the end of the world, but you're doing a lot of work to convert to ESM just to convert it back to CommonJS before you run the code on the server.
Which, could save you some headaches. Yeah, there are situations where that is definitely the way to go. If you've spent a lot of time, your application compiles, your application works, but then it doesn't run in ESM, there are points where you're just going to throw your hands up and be like, all right, I'm shipping this.
And then also I learned that TypeScript has this export equals syntax for CommonJS modules that allows you, remember I talked about the exporting the object with the properties inside of it? If you do want to do that, like you're like, I'm not refactoring this thing right now. It's a whole class with methods on it. And I just want to be able to, a whole object with methods in it. Then you can just use the export equals syntax
Well, that will this has never crossed my radar ever.
Yeah, I had to dig deep. It was a dark week. It wasn't a week. It probably took me 10 hours to convert the whole thing over.
Yeah, mine probably took longer, but it was only because I was doing a lot of tearing down. It wasn't just, you know, just a conversion.
Yeah, as I'm doing the TypeScript right now, I am finding myself rewriting so much because TypeScript finds all these like bugs, and I was like, well, I could like type this oddly, or I could just rewrite the function so that it's so much simpler and then it's easy to type. So it's funny how it makes you second guess everything.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, let's talk building, transpiling. One of the cool things about this is that to use a lot of these features that we're talking about, the top level await stuff, the just straight up imports, you don't have to compile it even in the browser. You don't have to. But if you're using TypeScript with which we're seeing just a lot of people using, then you're going to have to compile it in some regard. There's a lot of means to do this. People use things like Node.ts to just like run it, or SWC to bundle, or ESBuild. I've always used ESBuild because it was really the first that was very, very fast on the scene that was easy to use. I wrote a config for it. I wrote a little build script, and it just worked and didn't touch after that until Node Vite came along and was like, hey, what if that custom build script you wrote was just taken care of for you? I was like, oh, that sounds pretty good. And Node Vite is by all means really great as well. I'm of the understanding that Vtest runs Node Vite, but I could be wrong on that. So it's one of the awesome AntFoo projects. Well, it's been moved essentially to the Vtest mono repo.
I was building a pretty complex function the other day that replaced values in URLs. I was like, this is perfect use case for Vtest. So I spun up Vtest. I didn't even spun it up. I installed it. And then I wrote like 20 different possible tests. And then I wrote the function and to match all the things. And I was like, I know that's called test-driven development, but I was like, this was so simple where I could write all this TypeScript and I didn't have to set anything up. I just ran it.
Man, that was like the bane of my existence, was getting our just tests to play nice with the rest of our setup. It was like I was using a whole ESM setup for our entire code base, shipping ESM. And then when I went to use Jest, I had to start compiling things. And I was feeling very like distraught that I was having to do that. Yeah. So that's why moving to Vtest was so nice. And really quick, I know we very briefly talked about Vite Node, but Vite Node is a really cool project. Out of the box, ESM and TypeScript, pipeline plugins, resolve and aliasing out of the box, Vite config, HMR, a separate server and client, top level await, shims for dir name and file name, so you don't have to do that, access to native node modules. It was just a really, really neat project. And you get all that like stuff that you like from Vite, but it's just straight up node.
Maybe I should try this. So I have been using, so on the first half of it, I was using TSC just to convert it. And I know that there was only like 5% of the code base was TypeScript, but it's still a very good compiler for JavaScript as well. And then I switched to TSX, which is the same thing as that. You just write TSX index.js or TSX index.ts, and then it just runs it like it's a replacement for Node on the command line. And that worked great. And the only reason I had to do that instead of just typing Node is because I had a couple files that were already in TypeScript. Dependencies. I said earlier, you can import common JS dependencies into your ESM. So if you have a dependency that, like, some of the stuff I have hasn't been updated in 4 years, right? Like, it's just a module. It's been deployed. There's no updates to it. It works. It's very simple. They're probably not going to ship an ESM version of that, but importing it into ESM is no issue. The only weird thing is sometimes you need to import the entire module and destructure the value out of it that you need, but not a big deal. All of the Sindre Sorhas modules have been ESM for probably a year or so or 2 years now. So he has gone full go on it. He has this really good Gist thread, which basically details, okay, your package is not working in my thing. Here's how to make it work. And you can make it work in CommonJS if you need to with asynchronous imports, but it's often more trouble than it's worth because of then you have to change how the flow control of your app works. And it's sometimes easier just to just rename that one file to .mjs. And then you can write that file in ESM and move along with your day. Or you can convert your entire application like I did.
Yeah, I know. There's definitely pros and cons to all of those decisions that you're making right there. Let's talk about publishing, which is definitely a fascinating topic. You know, one of the cool things that you can do with publishing here with ESM that I honestly, since I've never been super up on CJS in the beginning, but you can have different exports with completely different paths, essentially. So you use what is the module.exports. I'm not module. So you use the exports property in your package.json, and then you're able to specify paths for everything. And you can do so in a really simple manner where it's exports, and there's your object. Each property is a relative path, or each property, I should say, is the export path of your module, and then it points to the value being a relative path to the file. And you can have multiple exports from an ESM package that point to completely different things, meaning you can have like node code being exported from one package and then browser code from another export in your module without having them all to compile to one main export and having to include both in the like main export or anything like that. So that to me is like a big plus, is that you can include so many different things, but then map them all. And not only that, if you want to get like really intense about it, you can also do an import or a require property within an object value of that same export. So the easiest way to think about this is if you have like a default export to this whole thing, or a default path, like level up tuts / auto form. That's my auto form package.
Yeah.
If you were to have the property just be a dot, then the export for that would just be the straight up at level up tuts auto form. But then if you have let me pull up my actual package here. But then if you have an export that is / tag dot svelte or dot js or whatever, then the property of that can be pointed to a specific file, and then you would import it at level up tuts / auto form / then tag dot svelte or whatever you would have there, meaning that you can really have more complex pointing to where the imports are coming in and where they're going out, as intense as you want to make this, essentially.
Yeah, that's really nice that you can do that. I had to do that. Luckily, I'm not publishing anything in my app, but I have a handful of modules that I have open sourced and just published to NPM. And Vite makes that, again, Vite makes that so easy. And they have a good documentation on their website on like, how do you ship your code so that anyone that is consuming either one can get it? And a lot of developers aren't doing this right now. But for my stuff, I wanted it to be a good experience, because if you NPM init, NPM install something, and it's a ESM only module, the first experience you have with that is it's broken. It's so frustrating I think back to all the, like, I always talk about my frustration with Python is that, like, first of all, I don't know what's going on with the Python thing. I just want it to work. And I never have the right modules, and I got to pip something here and pip something there and until it works. And I don't know what's going on. I don't want that experience for people who are new to coding or whatever. So it's nice to be able to ship both a CommonJS and a MJS version.
Or being a platform that forces you into one, right? If you're in a Vite-based platform, it's kind of forcing you into like an ESM flow. And then you're not going to get into that situation either. One thing I really like about SvelteKit is that it includes a package command. And that package command generates this whole exports thing for you. So anytime you have a file inside of the lib folder in your application. You run the package command. It generates the exports for you. And that's how I learned the syntax from it, is by looking at this generated, oh, okay, that's what you have to do, because I didn't have to write it myself and jump through any hoops there.
Wait, where is that package command?
It's just svelte-package.
Oh, okay, good. I was like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. So I've wasted like 3 hours of my life trying to figure out the perfect combination of that type of thing. Because like there's so many permutations, right? There's somebody that's using ESM, and there's someone that's using ESM and importing the common JS version and vice versa. And then there's TypeScript added to it. And also, if you want types in it, I learned, this is a little tip, if you have to export types from your package that you're publishing, apparently the types has to be the first thing in your exports. Otherwise, TypeScript will have a hard time finding it or get mad about it.
As a D.TS or what?
Yeah. Because generally when you like publish a package, you generate a D.TS file, and then whoever's using that package and consuming it gets the types along with it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I didn't know it had to be first. Huh.
I was just posting on Twitter, and someone said, hey, like, put your types first, otherwise there may be issues. It's kind of weird because it's an object. Like, why does the order of an object matter, especially for types? But
yeah, some of that stuff with when you get into TypeScript stuff that just works, and I'm just like, yeah,
don't question it.
Maybe I'm just happy with it just working, and yeah.
Oh, so that is moving from CJS to ESM. We've been talking about it a while. It's kind of kind of bonkers. The other thing that we didn't talk about was, I'll mention it real quick. If you're importing an ESM module into a common JS file via the asynchronous method we talked about, in order to access the default export, you literally have to type .default or destructure the default property of it, because it just returns you an object, and each property on that object is an export, and then the default export is just called default.
Yeah, definitely important. And something that you'll see the moment that you try to import something and it, like, it'll give you that property of thing is not on thing. You're like, all right, let me fire this up a console log. Oh, wait, there it is, default. Okay. I feel like that's like one of those things that you
all
just
the
hit,
time,
right?
Yeah. And usually that happens when people are compiling to Common JS and running, I'm authoring it in ESM, but it still says .default. And that's usually because you're compiling to Common JS. Sometimes you have to do that, but I probably recommend go all in ESM.
I probably would too.
Because that's another thing I hit. I thought initially, okay, well, I'll just keep compiling to Common JS as I convert this thing. But then I used one top level await, mm-hmm. and the thing broke. It says you can't use top level await in Common JS, and I was like, well, I didn't. I used it in ESM, but you compiled it to Common JS, and then I looked for like an option that would maybe compile it to an iffy, but the flow control is totally different and not worth it. You got to just bite it off. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I found going half in and half out is like you're trying to hold up one structure while building another one. And that's like really tough. So you either, move it over or not. Yeah. I found it to be challenging, but give yourself the time. Give yourself the expectation that it'll be challenging, and maybe you'll be pleasantly surprised, and maybe you'll be discouraged by the end of it. But either way, you'll be on the standard and you'll be moving forward.
All right, that's it. Let's move into some sick picks. Boy, do I got a good sick pick for you today. I posted this one on Twitter earlier today, and literally it made the Amazon price triple. And I didn't even link it. I just sent a link to one guy in the comments. This is like on rollerblade level. So this is an egg dispenser for your fridge.
Egg dispenser, maybe more like gold dispenser right now. Are eggs crazy expensive for you guys? Or
they're starting to come down, but eggs have always been expensive in Canada. And I remember going to Meijer when we visit my sister, and you buy a dozen eggs for like 99 cents. And like generally a dozen eggs here is like $4 to $5 for a dozen eggs. And now you can find them on sale for for $4, and now they're kind of up to $5, $5.50. It's starting to come down, but I heard they're crazy in the States as well.
Yeah, and I heard it's because of the avian flu stuff, but you know, I have no actual knowledge about that. All I know is that I told Courtney before we went to Costco that eggs are going to be hard to come by, and so she like booked it to the eggs, and sure enough, there was like hardly any, and people were like, "Where did you get the eggs?"
Oh man.
Early bird gets a worm.
My sister also has a bunch of chickens. So she often brings us, like, I think she gets something like 20 eggs a day from her chickens.
Real egg,
She's got tons of them and they taste better. But anyway, so this thing is a, my problem with eggs in the fridge is that you put the carton in, And you don't know which one, like, you've started using. And then, like, you want to stack stuff on top of it because space is at a premium. And then you have to, like we always put the yogurt tubes and stuff on top of it. And then you got to, like, take it out and you got to put it back in. You got to move stuff around. So I found this egg dispenser that is two levels. You can get one level if you're not a big egg fan. But we got two levels. And then it's three across. And you load it with eggs, and then as you take an egg out, it rolls forward to the front, and you can just keep taking them out, and it's amazing. And the best part about it is that it's like a shelf, so that you could put other stuff on top of it. You put yogurt on top of it, you bag of milk or whatever, and it's like you've gained more space because you can put stuff on top of your eggs, and you don't have to take it up and down every single time. So it was like, I don't know, like $20 or something like that. And it was just one of those things. We've had it for about a month. And every time I take an egg out, I'm like, oh, this was well worth it.
Yeah. Eggs are notoriously obnoxious. Our fridge has like one of those egg sections. You know, you flip up, you put the eggs in the section. And it's not like doesn't have the grooves for the eggs. But like the standard size carton of eggs doesn't fit in it without squishing it just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So you put it in there, and I got to like carefully squish it up in there. And I'm like, oh, please don't break. Please don't break. So I'm definitely going to cop this because it looks awesome.
And it holds a lot. The other thing about like a lot of fridges have the spots for the eggs, you know, like the individual holes. But like it's 12. Like who's buying? Yeah. I have family. Who's buying 12 eggs?
I'm
buying
sometimes even less than that. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, like, and then you have to put the carton in the fridge anyway because there's not, and then got to refill that. I want to put all of the eggs in this thing and not have to have the cardboard box in there. So this is the best.
Yeah, I want a button on the front of my door. I push it and an egg comes out. That's what I want. I'm going to sick pick a podcast that I've been really loving. Man, I don't know how this podcast eluded me. But it's the Pure Cinema podcast from the New Beverly. It's like, you know, kind of like very cinema focused podcast. And I watch a lot of movies. I went to school for music, but I took like several film theory classes and film history classes. Like I would consider myself like pretty up on some of this stuff. I've seen over like 250 Shaw Brothers Kung Fu's food movies from the 70s. Like I've watched a lot of movies and I'm listening to some of the episodes of this podcast where they'll be like, here's our, you know, 10 movies that are cult movies from the 1980s or whatever. And I'm listening to this and I haven't heard of like a single movie in most of these episodes, and they'll like talk about them. And sure enough, there'll be like directors that I've heard of, or, you know, they'll feature actors before they were famous or actors that you even heard of or whatever. And I'm just like, like, I feel like they're talking a different language sometimes. As somebody who's like even into this stuff, I can't believe just how many movies they're talking about that I've never heard of. So and they even have some like, you know, guests. Tarantino shows up on a few episodes and they get some like famous people on here, but even not famous film people, film reviewers and people who have been writing for film magazines for a long time. So I found this podcast to be insanely good. If you are the type of person who likes movies and you're, you know, interested in finding some obscure, more obscure things, Pure Cinema podcast, very, very good.
Wow, that sounds really cool. I can't believe you've watched that many movies. That's unreal.
Dude, I mean, my collection of Shaw Brothers Kung Fu movies is pretty amazing. And one interesting thing is there is an episode on 1970s Kung Fu films in this podcast, and I haven't listened to it yet because I'm afraid it's going to damage my ego. Like, I feel like I could tell you all the directors, all the actors. I could tell you the history. I have like film study books on this stuff. And like, if I listen to this episode and I don't know what they're talking about, I'm going to feel like, what have I even been doing?
So, oh, that's yeah, great.
I'm putting it off because I'm afraid of how it's going to make me feel. But no, this thing is awesome. Yeah. Cordy and I do a thing every year where we watch a 1980s Halloween movie. But
yep.
We've been doing it since we started dating. So like at this point, you know, we're way past any of the standard films and we're into like just totally obscure stuff now and random stuff. Or, you know, the only rule is that it should be as 80s as possible. Like that's the rule. And like we're kind of on an 80s off at that point. Like
yeah.
Who can get it the most 80s? And man, I'm ready for this Halloween already. I got a list going.
That's great. Awesome. Shameless plugs, westboss.com/courses for a list of all the JavaScript CSS courses I offer. A bunch of free ones there, a bunch of paid ones. If you do buy one, use coupon code SYNTAX for $10 off.
My shameless plug is levelup.video. We do new courses all the time. We have a new course on Svelte and TypeScript. It's going to be awesome, teaching all the ins and outs of both Svelte and Svelte Kit to have fully typed apps and all of the good stuff so that you don't have to spend any time getting up and running, whether you are a TypeScript beginner or a Svelte beginner. We kind of take it from the approach that everybody would love to, you know, have type-safe applications up and down the stack, whether that's generated types coming in from your server, cross-platform, all that stuff. So check it out, levelup.video, coupon code SYNTAX for 30% off the yearly subscription.
All right, that's it for today. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Catch you on Friday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.